Joe Hofstetter. He's an architect evangelist on my team, specializing in the telecommunications space. And he's been really working on a concept called communications as a service. And I wanted to go a little deeper into what that is and how it applies to telecommunications. So can you just start off by telling us what CAS, or communications as a service, is?
Communications as a service is an architecture for telecommunications applications in which a number of IP services are hosted out in a cloud type environment. And what makes this somewhat different than a just software as a service type application is there's a signaling layer within the architecture that allows disparate endpoints to connect each other based on the presence of the user agent itself, which is another term for endpoint.
Okay. Well, how does, you know, explain some telecommunications application. Like, what would we apply CAS to?
Well, as on the diagram here, you could have a PBX, which is a private branch exchange, which is basically an enterprise communication system, an enterprise switch. You could have voicemail. Voicemails are actually, most people think of voicemail as just part of their communication service itself. It's actually a whole separate application hosted on another set of servers. Video conferencing is another type of communications application that allows you to set up video conferences from laptop to laptop or using a something like Microsoft Roundtable in the middle of a room. Another one is a company that I'm actually meeting with next week that does voice recording and hooks into a PBX itself. And so that would be another type of communications application that would be hosted within this paradigm.
And so how does this differ from traditional delivery of telecommunications applications?
Well, telecommunications applications were traditionally delivered as hardware and software solutions at a time when memory and hardware and all these pieces of technology were very expensive. You had to build your software to really maximize the amount of efficiency and throughput that you have on that box. So a PBX, and then the other big trend that feeds into this is ubiquitous high speed networks. What we have to our houses today, and you can see even some bandwidth of, you know, 12, 13 megabit downloads and, you know, guaranteed 1.54 megabit uploads. So these high-speed networks are so ubiquitous and so low cost compared to even the way the expenses that they were 10 years ago. We now have the ability to host these applications in a cloud.
So you're saying that the traditional way of was basically having the hardware and the software tightly bound together and delivering it as a single package. Now you're saying these can be separated?
I'm saying that absolutely. Okay. And another piece that could be separated too is the signaling itself was always part of the network. So it was always part of the network itself. Now, because of these high-speed ubiquitous IP networks, the signaling itself lives in the application layer. So very much like HTTP, the session initiation protocol, which is a signaling which is a signaling protocol, now lives in the application layer.
And so how does this, you know, you touched on video conferencing. That's probably what I'm saying. One of the video conferencing, video over the net, on all these different types of uses of video that relies on that big fat pipe going everywhere. And how does that affect, or how does CAS affect that?
CAS itself doesn't completely affect that. Now, I mean, video conferencing, you have all these applications out there already. What really communications as a service allows you to do is deliver this within a multi-tenanted environment. So that's the other part of the architecture itself. It allows you to aggregate these different communications applications into a single cohesive service.
What do you mean by multi-tenanted?
What I'm talking about, multi-tenanted, and video conferencing itself may or may not really it definitely lends itself to a multi-tenanted situation, but a more clear description of what a multi-tenanted application would be is something like an enterprise PBX, in which in which PBXs tended to be one system per company. And it was a very high cost implementation model, where a company just a large bank or something like that would buy a number of PBXs, kind of aggregate them together on their own premises and have them managed separately. Some of the advantages to a multi-tenanted situation with the PBX is you can actually get it out to more people. So a small, a pizzeria with three locations could actually have a single communication system that's hosted in the cloud. These original, the traditional communication systems, especially in the enterprise space, would cost something like, $100,000. And, if you're a small business, you really can't afford that kind of, or a small startup, you really can't afford that kind of initial investment and implementation.
So I'm still not incredibly totally clear on what a multi-tenant application is. Can you just sort of show me a diagram, the difference from, like, for example, a single tenant, or is that the opposite, a single tenant?
A single tenant application, you would have one instance per company. So a single instance per company. Multi-tenanted application allows multiple companies to share a single processing instance on the background. So it's actually a very different architecture. And so with a single instance architecture, what you're talking about is a process, and you just think about it as any software process running in the background. And that process is dedicated to a single company.
Got it.
With a multi-tenanted application, those processes are broken down into into a number of smaller services. Those services themselves can be deployed and accessed through many different users.
So the issues that start to come up when building one of these multi-tenant CAS applications, of course, security and separation and things like billing and all those kind of things, right?
Yes.
Okay. From what I've been understanding, one of the real benefits of doing a CAS application is to be able to have things like presence. Can you sort of explain how presence would be handled, or how presence applies to CAS?
Well, presence applies to CAS in really within the signaling layer. And in the next talk we do, we'll get deeper into the CAS architecture, in which we'll show the separation of concerns between the actual, SIP layer, the signaling layer, and then the services layer that are on top of that. And we'll actually dive a little bit deeper into some of these multi-tenanted applications and architecting them. But in terms of how presence behaves, what presence gives is the ability for an individual to, in effect, kind of log onto the network and allow the network to know where to route your calls to, or where to route where to contact you on. So if you're if your presence is on, say, a desktop phone, and all these technologies are there today in the enterprise space. So if your presence is associated with a desktop phone itself, then your calls will come through in a telephone call situation. If your presence becomes associated, say, with a smartphone, Then your calls would go to your smartphone all through the same identification. So basically, within presence, you have a device presence. You have the presence of the device itself, and then you have the presence of a human being, and then you associate that human being with the device on where they want to be contacted, and then you could go through what's known as something like a hunt group, to be able to say, okay, he's associated with this desktop phone, but he's not picking up, so let's try him on the cell phone. And then beyond there, let's try him on his Xbox something, or some other device that could be associated with presence. And then finally, have it go to voicemail if he's not anywhere.
Got it. So presence, would that be considered a service, or...
Presence is a communication service, but it's not at the communication services layer within the architecture. It's really something. It's really part of the overall infrastructure and network itself.
Okay, And so when you take all these services together, we sort of have an aggregation of these services. Can you sort of explain that?
Well, the aggregation of the services are really supported by a service-oriented architecture. Take a common PBX at this, in this day and age, there's something like, for your average, large-scale enterprise, there's something like 900 different features on that, of which most companies, use part of, and some of which are really applicable to your higher end, to your larger scale companies. So you have different services like boss secretary and things like that that are just not applicable to a small to medium sized business. So you could actually take these 800, 900 type features, and you could break them down into a number of smaller features. So say, a number of services supporting a smaller set of features, say 25 each. And then you could really create this very dynamic environment for a small to medium-sized business or anything all the way up to a very large-scale business where you have, where people pick and choose which features they want. And that could even differentiate how, the ultimate cost and billing of the service.
Got it. And so these are the kind of, so looking at trends in the industry, these are the kind of things that we're going to start to see as concepts like CAS sort of become adopted and standardized.
Absolutely. There's a number of industry trends right now in terms of things like, fixed mobile convergence that really support CAS, and that would be your IMS, IP multimedia subsystem infrastructure. That again allows you to associate presence on a mobile network with presence on the on the fixed network. There's also other trends that absolutely more of a demand for this kind of aggregated service type environment. Software as a service itself, with taking communications out of the context, is becoming a very popular way to deploy applications, because it reduces cost in terms of data center costs for the end consumer of the service, and it expands reach out to businesses that would have never been able to afford a large implementation in the first place.
So, looking at like the business of CAS and where you might find more information about CAS, if I were to search on the internet for CAS, would I find sort of a consensus of what it is, or is that still being ironed out?
It's still being ironed out, to get to your point. I mean, a lot of what you hear about CAS right now is somewhat marketing wear, so you hear about, okay, here's a communications as a service type solution. What there isn't a whole lot out there, and hopefully we're bringing some of this about, from Microsoft, is reference architectures. Here's how to build a CAS application. Here's, the business drivers behind it. Here's some of the technical trends that overall support this, this cloud type, this cloud computing environment.
We've adopted this name, CAS, Communications as a Service. Are there other ways this is being termed in the industry?
I haven't seen it termed any other way. I have seen this term used beyond Microsoft.
And so if a company wanted to deliver some sort of CAS solution, what's required to do that?
Well, first off, you need a very dynamic environment on the background. What you need to do is you have to understand, number one, multi-tenanted applications. You have to understand how to take an application and expand it, like you mentioned earlier, and provide security, to provide some sort of isolation between tenant data, yeah, things like that. So that's something you need to understand. You have to understand how to build a service-oriented architecture, how to build take a current application and move it into this environment, which is something that I'm currently working with the company on doing. And then the other thing you need to do if you're starting from scratch is functionally decompose an application to provide a number of services. You have to understand the difference between, and this is really software as a service type things, between scaling up and scaling out. How do you want to allow this application to scale? You have to understand some of the operating system type scalability. You know, do you choose to use virtualization on the back end? I frankly think that on any dynamic environment, virtualization is a great technology to be able to scale out your application and provide ease of provisioning and a lot of the other aspects that you really want within this kind of environment.
So if somebody watching this video, this interview, if they said, okay, I think what we want to build is actually, we'd call it a CAS application. Your role in all of this is sort of explain that, help understand the architecture of that for that specific user within the whole telecom industry. Is that sort of correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The company I'm currently working with, what we did is we went through their current application architecture, took a look at it, decomposed it, basically mapped it into the reference architecture, which we'll be talking about in another interview. So mapped it to the separation of concerns that they needed to take different parts of their application and put it there. Now, granted, it's conceptual, not a physical breakdown. And then what we did beyond there was took it and mapped it to a physical breakdown of what nodes needed to live where within the overall environment.
And you've written about this as well, right?
Correct. I have an article on MSDN that goes through the reference architecture for CAS, describes the SIP protocol, which is, you know, it's not a standard, but it's becoming very close. You know, it's becoming a standard way of sharing presence information, you know, between different user agents.
Is SIP a Microsoft protocol or?
Oh no, that's no. It's absolutely not. The thing is, it's not a Microsoft protocol. It's an industry protocol.
Okay, and where would you go to find industry information? You know, where do you find you, and where are you on the internet?
Well, I mean, you could go to my blog, which is. And the title will come up, but it's blogs.msdn.com/Joe_Hofstetter. I believe that that's
okay. Well, I'll put that up. And what are some other places on the internet person would go to learn more about this?
Well, I do a live search on session initiation protocol, because if you understand what session initiation protocol is in IMS, then you will understand. Then you could definitely understand the basis of communications as a service. What differentiates it from just hosted application?
Well, thank you very much, Joe. I think we learned a lot today.
Thanks, Mike.